This episode of Market Talk is brought to you by Growmark FS. Keeping up on the latest in ag is a challenge, to say the least, but there are experts nearby ready to help. You'll find them at your local FS. You can trust them to bring you customized agronomic grain and energy solutions born of the latest thinking. That's because FS specialists receive continuous training that keeps them current on the latest trends, practices, and technologies. So you'll get local expertise that's both exceptional and up-to-date. Visit fssystem.com to learn how FS is bringing you what's next.
Bringing you the ag information you need. This is Market Talk, produced by the American Ag Radio Network. Now, here's your host, Jesse Allen.
Well, lower than anticipated weekly crop ratings from USDA had an impact to the upside in the grain and oilseed markets on the day on Tuesday. Welcome into Market Talk. Thank you so much for joining us and making us part of your day today. I'm your host, Jesse Allen, as we dive in and take a look at what is going on in the market, trade, and issues impacting rural America. Always a pleasure to be with you here on the program. And as I was mentioning, again, lower than expected crop ratings from the USDA on the weekly crop progress report ending Sunday, August 7th. That seemed to be the catalyst to move us to the upside in the grain and oilseed trade for the most part on the day Tuesday, with the soy complex, beans, and bean meal. They were the upside leaders. And looking at that crop progress report again, falling 3 percentage points in corn, and that is down to 58% good to excellent nationwide. That is the seventh lowest rating since the year 2000. Now, also, we saw soybeans down a percentage point to 59% good to excellent. Spring wheat falling 6 percentage points to 64% good to excellent. A lot of the issues coming in the western corn belt with the heat and dryness starting to really impact crops there in areas that haven't caught a rain. Meantime, the eastern corn belt looking pretty good, with Illinois, Indiana ratings actually going up here this past week. We're going to talk more about the markets, take a deep dive into the trade action we saw on Tuesday, as well as take a look ahead to Friday's USDA WASD numbers. We're going to talk with Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net coming up here in segment 3 and 4 on the show today, and get Matt's thoughts on the market trade action and maybe some tips on risk management. We're going to get to that coming up later in the show. Also, crop tours starting up. We're going to talk to Mike Miner of Professional Ag Marketing coming up in segment 2. They recently completed their crop tour of the country. We're going to get Mike's thoughts on what he saw with the crop and their yield estimates that they are putting out there as well. That's coming up here in segment 2. But first up, a conversation with Arlen Suderman, Chief Commodities Economist at StoneX. I talk to Arlen midday every weekday on our family of networks here under the American Ag Network umbrella, and always look forward to getting Arlen's insight and analysis here on the program as we look at Tuesday's market trade action. Again, talking to Arlen around midday, and I led with the question. I asked him if he thought the lower than expected crop ratings was the biggest impact on the grain trade on Tuesday. Here's what Arlen had to say.
Yeah, I would certainly agree with that. I think it caught just about everyone by surprise. I expected that we would see some deterioration, particularly in the corn crop, in this week's ratings. It was larger than what I anticipated, and I think suggests that maybe we have a more significant problem than what we first believed. There is some very good corn out there. But the good corn is more biased to the east. We've got quite a separation across the Mississippi River. Yes, there's some good corn west of the Mississippi River, but the overall trend is much more toward problems west of the Mississippi River and good east of the Mississippi River, even though, yes, I know that we've got some pockets that were dry east as well. But this is a crop now. We're talking about how far below trend, and how does that tighten the balance sheet? It still seems to be a market where the funds want to sell the rallies. And so we're going to have to watch and see what the sustainability of this market is at the current time. I'm anticipating that USDA is going to have a pretty good August 1 estimate on Friday that may cool the bulls a little bit. What we really need to do is get out in the field with the crop tours here in the last half of August and get the reports from the field what's happening. And I think that's when the funds will take a greater interest in these crops.
And you brought up crop tours, and I know we've seen a few different tours now, and we've seen a few different private estimates. I know the Stone X estimates, you guys updated those last week. Just looking at some of these early estimates, it's one of those where it's so far doesn't look like we're going to get that record yield, but maybe something more low 170-ish for corn, probably low to mid 170s, and then right around that 50-51 for soybeans. Is that kind of the general gist you're getting from seeing all the different results and then obviously the Stone X numbers?
I think that's a pretty good assessment from where we're at right now in a snapshot. Keep in mind that USDA on Friday is going to be reporting condition of the crop as of August 1st. And that's what a lot of the private estimates have been to this point that have been with higher yields, including ours, which is at 176, our customer survey. That was as of August 1st. And I think that's a pretty good assessment of where the crop was on August 1st. I think it's a pretty good rationale to argue that the crop has deteriorated since August 1st. And looking at the weather forecast, it's a legitimate question to ask how much it might deteriorate further as we go through the remainder of August, depending on how that forecast verifies. I think it makes it very difficult to get up back up above a 177 yield. It comes down now to seed size and whether we're above normal or below normal in temperatures. We speed up the crop or we slow it down, and that'll have a big impact on seed size.
And in the livestock trade today, Arlen, mostly lower there, led down by feeder cattle. I'd have to imagine, again, that feeder corn ratio with corn higher today having an impact in the protein sector today.
It certainly is when you look at the price of corn and feed going higher, and then particularly when you look at the deficit of corn in some of the larger feedlot producing states, that's making the cash price of corn so high. When we're seeing basis $1.50, $1.75, $2 and more above the spot futures, for corn going into those feedlots, it's making it very expensive to feed cattle right now. And the market's certainly reflecting that this morning's higher corn prices.
And again, that's comments with Arlen Suderman, Chief Commodities Economist at Stone X. I talked to Arlen around midday on Tuesday's session as we saw the grains and oilseeds working their way to the upside and talking about the livestock market being under pressure as well as grains move their way to the upside. One other note, one other story I want to share here in segment one on Market Talk today. National Corn Growers Association CEO John Doggett is encouraging corn farmers to comment on the atrazine label revision. He says corn farmers should let the EPA know how important atrazine is and has been for years.
Atrazine is one of the most studied chemicals there is. It has been proven over and over and over again, when used properly, to be safe and, more importantly, very effective. And we're being called upon to produce more food, to sequester more carbon, and to do all of this with a better environmental footprint. We can't do that if we keep losing our tools.
You can submit a comment through the NCGA website.
Go to ncga.com, go to our Take Action section, and there is an opportunity for you to click on a comment, and you can type in your own operation, your own family, your own community, and tell EPA what is it that loss of atrazine would mean to you and your family. That comment period ends in September, the first part of September. We need to get those comments in soon.
And the comment period closes on Tuesday, September 6th. And again, you can submit a comment to the EPA at ncga.com. All right, coming up next, Mike Miner, Professional Ag Marketing, joins us to go over their crop tour results. That's on the way after the break. Back with more Market Talk right after this.
Keeping you informed with the latest market information for your operation. This is Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
And joining us now, Mike Miner with Professional Ag Marketing, just getting back off their crop tour here last week. Mike, good to catch up with you, man. How are you?
I am doing well, better in the office now, and better after this rain over the weekend.
Yeah, you know, I want to touch on that here in a second, that rain really hitting some key areas of the Central Corn Belt here over the weekend and may have really helped out some growers in the region. But just to start, I want to talk about your guys' crop tour. I know two different routes you guys had, kind of a western route and an eastern route. If you want to divvy it out that way, I'll pull them up on the video screen. But just talking about this, I know I think you had the bit longer route, Mike. Overall, I know you guys done this a couple of years. I mean, overall, what are your thoughts? Better than expected, worse than expected, pretty much in line. I know we'll break it down more, but just general nationally, what did you think?
Yeah, so we had the southern route on that. We kind of worked our way south through Nebraska first and then over to Ohio and back. And then Lucas Peters out of our office, he did the northern route and just wanted to touch base a little bit more localized, really dive into some numbers more between Minnesota, South Dakota, and North Dakota. And, you know, just like any crop tour, you can pretty much look at a drought map and you know what you're going to see when you go into it. I would say the key observations for me are, you know, the big question this year is, can the Eastern Corn Belt make up for the Western Corn Belt's shortfalls? And it's a really tough answer out of the Western Corn Belt, because how bad is bad out of Nebraska, right? It's going to be a really tough state to put a number on this year. You know, with it being irrigated a lot of the state, that's going to help out some. But obviously the dry land is going to start really hurting us on that yield. So it's really tough to try to peg the Nebraska number. And that's going to be the one that I can move more than any of the other numbers. Now, when we moved into Missouri, I would argue that, you know, the largest corn producing counties in that state are in the north, which is still fine compared to the dryness they had in the south. So we didn't touch too much into it. We tried to a little bit south of Miami there, but didn't find anything too stressful quite yet. And then Illinois was very interesting, I thought. So the eastern part of Illinois, kind of the drought map between Illinois and Indiana there, when we had a little bit more stress towards the end of July, that area was a little bit more disappointing than what I thought the perfect ice states looked like going into the tour. And I don't know if it was exactly the late planting that contributed to a little bit of poorer results than what I had seen out of those stops in the last few years. I noticed it a lot in Indiana and then into Western Ohio as well. The few people I talk with out of Columbus, you know, that area is fine, but Western Ohio was just too wet all year long. And as we wrap back north on that start of the crop tour, I started to see some really impressive stuff probably about halfway through Illinois. And when we got up the northwestern side of the state, that's where I saw what I would call a record crop from basically there up to, you know, Albert Lea type area, central Iowa. And then when I got back to about Bancroft there in Iowa, that's where I started to see more dryness kind of taking over, a little bit lighter soil. You could start to really tell by that point. But that stretch, I would call as probably the ice state, the wonderful corn crop they had talked about going into it. But between Illinois and Indiana, I was a little bit disappointed. It's not a bad crop by any means, but it maybe wasn't quite as good as what I would have hoped for average crops out of that area.
Now, I was looking through your guys' analysis from the tour. One thing that stood out to me a little bit, we've been hearing more and more about dryness in southwest Iowa, but you guys found some pretty decent looking corn in southwest Iowa that, you know, I mean, who knows what it'll look like here as we move through. Will test weights come down if we stay dry? But that stood out to me as one area. And then to your point as well, kind of that north, far west, north central, northwestern Iowa, starting to see a little dryness. But then, you know, we'll touch on the rain there in a second. But those were two things that really stood out to me from your guys' tour, Mike.
Yeah, so like York, Nebraska, I would argue that area there, they had some hail damage and stuff from earlier, but more minute stuff, not really relevant on the drought map at all. And when we worked into southwest Iowa there, the Pottawatomie area is a spot that always looks pretty good, and that looked exceptional this year, very consistent corn. Some of the counties around it were a little bit more stressed, but I found really good corn going through that area. Will it be as good as last year? Maybe not quite, but I think it still has a very good chance at a good crop there, especially if they can catch some of those key rains. So I didn't see too bad of stuff down there. There's spots. If you go to a lighter area with some drier soil, you'll see it. But the really hard corn production high counties in the United States are what we targeted. So we try to hit the 20 largest corn production counties in the United States. And those, from what we saw, you know, the Illinois, Indiana ones were a little bit more below average or right at average. And that was a little bit on the bottom side of my expectations. Eastern Iowa was awesome. And then, you know, that York, Nebraska was still fine. And I thought Southwest Iowa, there, that county produces a lot of corn, and they're still going to have a pretty good crop.
Well, now looking at the weekend rains we saw, Mike, we got to think about that. Some of those areas that were starting to get a little stressed, basically draw a line from Sioux Falls along the Iowa-Minnesota border to, you know, parts in southern Wisconsin, northern Illinois. I mean, you're right in the heart of that. I mean, we've seen reports 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 inches of rain in some spots. So after you took the crop tour and now seeing this rain, what do you think that's going to do for the corn crop in that area, which is a very key corn production area in the country?
Yeah, so the 4 bushels they took off initially for late plant dates are going to be really hard to get back, I would argue. So now that we got this rain over a good chunk of the areas that really needed it, you know, I'm in Sioux Falls. We farmed just north of Sioux Falls. We got 2.5 inches of rain. That was like, that was from God above. That was what we really needed to keep the crop from going backwards. Now, is it going to add a lot onto the crop? I don't know how much it'll help finish it out. It's going to help, but I wouldn't say yield's necessarily going to go up dramatically from here. Probably just keeps it from going down much further. And I think that was the key point, Northwest Iowa included. I know it was a little bit more spotty down there, but they don't need a whole lot of rain to make a crop down there either with that good soil. So,
well, overall national yield that you guys found after compiling all your numbers, 176, that's pretty much in line with what USDA's at. You know, and I would have to agree, everything I saw from your tour and everything I'm hearing from other folks, that seems like that number's pretty attainable. As you look at that number nationally, Mike, I mean, barring something crazy, I think that's a pretty solid estimate that you guys came up with there, that 176 mark, as we head towards final yield numbers.
I think so. You know, Iowa's the one that carries the big stick here, and I just have a really hard time looking at the drought map and seeing last year's corn crop they're able to pull off. And for us to pull it under last year's yields is really tough for me. So that one, I think, is a solid hold. Nebraska's all over the board. You know, it's not 2012, but, you know, is it the 190 the crop they've got used to? Probably not either. So it's going to fall somewhere in between those. So that one moves the most, I would argue. And then Minnesota, they've caught a lot of good rains. I know it's dry up by Marshall. They found some drier stuff. They were a little bit better than last year. So I think the Minnesota one is solid as well. The Dakotas, you know, at late plant up in North Dakota, pulling that back a little bit. The stuff that is there looks good. South Dakota, I don't know how much that southeast corner of the state is going to matter for an overall state yield. I know the drought map looks better this year for South Dakota, and our stuff will be. But that, you know, we are chopping some fields south of Sioux Falls here, not very far. So that line from about Sioux Falls down to about halfway through Nebraska is going to be really the disaster zone that we've got to watch closely. But other than that, I would say average to just below. And that's kind of why we kind of came up with that 176 number. And to get much either side of it, like you said, we're going to need something major to change, I think, going forward.
Mike, before I let you go, I should mention as well, we got to give ourselves a plug. Dakota Fest coming up here next week, and on Wednesday the 17th, I know you and or Pat, one of you guys, going to be joining us for a market discussion there at 1 o'clock on Wednesday. Looking forward to having you there and talking about a lot of different things going on in the market trade right now.
Can't wait.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun, and that's coming up Wednesday the 17th during Dakota Fest in the Reeves Education Center, 1 o'clock, and we look forward to seeing you there. Mike, always appreciate the time, sir. We will we'll see you in Dakota Fest next week. Have a good one.
See you next time.
And again, that's Mike Miner with Professional Ag Marketing joining us today here on Market Talk. Coming up next, Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net will join us to run through Tuesday's trade action. We'll be back with more on the way right after this here on Market Talk.
Keeping up on the latest in ag is a challenge, to say the least, but there are experts nearby ready to help. You'll find them at your local FS. You can trust them to bring you customized agronomic, grain, and energy solutions born of the latest thinking. That's because FS specialists receive continuous training that keeps them current on the latest trends, practices, and technologies. So you'll get local expertise that's both exceptional and up-to-date. Visit fssystem.com to learn how FS is bringing you what's next.
And joining us now to talk about Tuesday's market trade action, we welcome in our good friend Matt Bennett with AgMarket.net. Matt, great to catch up with you, man. How are you?
I'm doing great, bud. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate the time. I know you're traveling today and busy with the speaking circuit in St. Louis, but we appreciate you jumping on the show today. Matt, you know, overall, Tuesday's trade action, grains to the upside led by soybeans. Corn was firm. Wheat was kind of choppy. But, I mean, overall, you know, we saw the lower than expected crop ratings Monday afternoon from USDA. We're starting to see some of these different crop tours now. We're starting to see some different yields come out that are looking lower. It just felt like maybe we put some premium back in because of that on Tuesday. Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you came out yesterday afternoon with this grow DTN number 167, I believe, what, 48 and a half or something like that?
I think that's right. Yep.
I knew the corn number. I mean, it hit me. At first, I thought 177, no big deal. I'm like, whoa, 167. That's a little different story, you know. The thing about it, I know a lot of people are saying, oh, well, whatever, you know, people are going to throw numbers here, there, and everywhere. Well, tell you what, that grow number from DTN, thermal imaging, pretty high tech stuff, it's actually been fairly accurate in the past couple of years. So, you know, I'm not saying I'm a sub 170 guy, because I'm not, but I can tell you that type of number from a system that's performed the way that it has definitely turned some heads, you know. And so you start looking at, obviously, whether you're talking corn or beans, either one of those numbers would be wildly bullish, because we're already looking at carryout numbers, you know, that are just awfully darn tight. Yeah, the corn condition rating going down 3%. My personal thought last Monday was that, you know, last Monday it seemed like we kind of stabilized things just a little bit on ratings. But I told my partners, in fact, I made a side bet with one of my partners. I said, corn and beans combined going to be down 4% next week. And I got kind of nervous because I thought that the weather maybe wasn't as bad as what, you know, as what I thought it was going to be. But still, whenever you throw 100 degree temps, even for a couple of days at this corn crop, when it's trying to pollinate and grain fill, it's not good. And so in the hot nights, is what people don't understand, really take a toll on this corn. It just can't cool off at night. It can't take a breather, so to speak. And so definitely crop ratings played into it as well. You know, I think that there's a lot of traders that maybe lost interest that saw those lower ratings, first of all, and saw that lower yield and said, maybe we want to go ahead and keep these long positions and see what this report has to say Friday.
Well, and looking at the corn crop specifically here, Matt, you know, you mentioned that 167 number coming in from the Grow DTN virtual tour. You know, let's say we end up with a lower 170 number in corn, even a number like a 172, 173, 174. That's still going to tighten up that balance sheet a little bit to where I would think we got some upside to go in this corn market to try and ration demand if we end up seeing a number even, you know, low 170s, Matt.
Yeah, so my thought is that if you get below 175, you start to get the attention of folks. You know, 175 and above, you're still probably going to hold in that 1.4 above as far as carryout's concerned, which, let's face it, when you're growing 15 billion bushels, that's tight. I mean, that is extremely tight. But 1.4 or below, I think, is where the trade's going to get super on edge, if you will. And so a few things are going on, in my opinion. You've got to ask yourself, what's old crop stocks going to look like on Friday? Some folks think we're looking at further tightening due to ethanol numbers performing well. Others feel like actually you're going to add maybe 25 million to carry because ethanol hasn't been as strong maybe at times in the last few weeks. Part of that's gasoline demand. But I mean, looking at the numbers as I see them, Jesse, I don't think that's going to be the case. I'm just saying there's a whole host of thoughts. And so, you know, mm-hmm. if you come in with a carryout on old crop of 1.4, then that's what you're carrying in. You got to understand you're carrying that into a situation where you don't have a plethora of acres by any stretch here for 22, first of all. Second of all, you know, I think with some of the issues we saw this week with, like, for instance, the first cargo coming out of Ukraine getting rejected due to the time lapse. I mean, they don't want to pay that demurrage. I mean, it's going to be extremely expensive. That certainly is something that we have to keep a close eye on, because, you know, there's no question that your demand could be awfully strong for U.S. corn, especially once you run out of Brazil corn. So there's a lot going on here, but I agree with you. You get below 175 and it starts to get, into my opinion, that scenario where you can really make a strong case for, I don't know, 5.25, 550 corn or better. You know, mm-hmm. and so a very similar type setup is what we've had over the last couple of years, quite frankly. You know, it was 2 years ago today, Jesse, you and I would have been talking about wanting to have a beer while we were talking because we were depressed, you know, and then the derecho came in, Chinese buying came in, you know, and it's been, we all know the story since then. But guys, we got to remember, we're still in really good shape. You know, yes, the markets were up today, but you've heard it and I've heard it. People are down in the dumps because corn's only $6 or beans are only $14 or below. Come on, you know, let's be realistic about it. I know that costs are a little bit higher. There's no question, but we're still looking at a very profitable situation right now.
Very true. You mentioned a point about maybe getting on the long side, especially in soybeans on the day Tuesday. It felt like some of those fund traders really put the money back in there. I know spot contracts, old crop, some new daily highs there, but even new crop up, you know, 25, 30 cents on the day on Tuesday. And I wonder as well with soybeans versus corn a little bit, if maybe there wasn't more movement in soybeans on the day, just because the old adage that beans are made in August and we still got, you know, a couple of weeks left to go here for the month of August, Matt.
Sure. Yeah, I agree with you. And I think when you look at the rainfall distribution over the last weekend, the people that got the rain, they got a lot of rain. I mean, what a mm-hmm. blessing, you know, to get 2, 3, 4 inches of rain. You know, I talked to folks in northern Iowa that had 4 inches of rain or more and didn't have any water standing. And I was in those shoes back over the 4th of July weekend. You know, we were super dry. And then we came in and started getting rain, and we didn't have water standing forever. But bottom line is this, the guys and gals that didn't get the rain, they didn't get any rain. And so it's a really worrisome situation, especially as you say, August is when you make the crop. And so I'll tell you what, if you can't catch rain whenever so many people are getting that much rain, you know, one thing, it's just defeating. It is so depressing for the folks, and I feel for them. The other thing is, though, is it tells you point blank that you're running out of time. You know, the 2-week forecast doesn't look all that promising for the areas that are dry. And I think people are looking at this saying, you know what if we do have a sub 50? If we have a sub 50, due to the fact that August is not conducive across the board to having good bean yields, you have a sub 50 and all of a sudden you're looking at you're definitely going to have to ration demand. Now, the flip side of that we have to remember, I always want to try to talk about both sides. I don't want to talk out of both sides of my mouth. I just want to talk about the other way of looking at this, is that this is a futures market. And so Brazil already said 4%, 3 to 4% more soybean acres this year. They're going to plant more safrinha crop corn on the second crop. They're coming to the table with more acres over this next year. And so with some of these guys talking 150 to 154 as far as the Brazil crop on soybeans, let's keep that, you know, in the back of our mind as you see any sort of excitement over U.S., whether you're talking 22 or 23, you know what, pay attention to it, because there could be some real opportunity in here, especially if August turns out to be as rough on us as what a lot of these forecasters are currently calling for.
And I think I saw a stat the other day on the Brazil thing. I don't know how accurate it is, but something to the effect they've added the equivalent of an Indiana and Illinois to their acreage. I don't know how correct that is, but that would make sense, make total sense. Matt, overall, heading into this report, it feels to me, you mentioned this, you know, with some good prices here, but to me, it feels like if I'm someone who doesn't want to make many moves, at least putting in a floor and locking in some risk management, being smart ahead of this report on Friday, that seems to be probably the best move I could do right now. Would it not be?
Yeah, and I guess that brings up a great point is that, you know, someone in my part of the country, you know, not everyone's going to have a bumper crop, but we've had a lot of moisture. So that means you're at least going to probably have an APH or better crop. You know, I don't want to make anybody mad, but you're going to have to really try hard to screw that up if you're raising a big crop this year, because prices are fantastic if you're raising a crop. Where it gets dicey is if you're not raising a crop. You know, that's a really tough row to hoe for some of these folks. And so in that situation, you look at these prices and you stop and think, well, what could happen? You know, yeah, you probably need to have some risk management. And here's why. My cohort, Brian Split, wrote a fantastic article last week for Farm Futures, and he talked about, you know, what happened a year ago. And what happened a year ago on the August report is you had a bullish corn number, you had a bullish bean number, period. Corn was down like 5 bushels from the July estimate. And so what did we do with those bullish numbers? Well, between then and the September report, we dropped almost $1 on corn and almost $2 on soybeans. And so that was with bullish numbers. And so I always tell folks, you know, if you're expecting a bullish report, and I think a lot of folks are, by golly, it better be really bullish for you to get the kind of reaction that you want to see. And so, you know, you're to answer your question, absolutely. Hey, you know what? If we have excitement this week, if we get a sharply higher move on Friday due to a low number, what a wonderful opportunity to at least step in and put a floor in if you're not raising the bushels. And what a wonderful opportunity to sell physical bushels if you've been blessed by good weather.
Fantastic advice. Matt, livestock on the day Tuesday, fairly quiet, mostly to the downside, led by feeders and live cattle. I know the hog market was a bit more mixed, especially the front month August and deferreds. But overall, livestock seemingly just kind of took their cue from a higher grain market on the day Tuesday. Is that what you saw?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be hard to rally feeders. And generally, it's going to be hard to rally hogs if you see, for instance, soybean meal up. It's going to be hard to rally feeders if you see corn up. I mean, it's just the way it works. And so I guess that's pretty much what we saw happen. Now, last week, of course, we had pretty good strong movement in cattle. As you know, I've been fairly friendly cattle. I think, you know, one thing that is really tough, I think it's tough for some folks to even talk about, is what's going on in the drought-stricken areas. You know, like, for instance, in the let's talk Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas. You know, there's a lot of cattle getting sold in that part of the world because you don't have pasture, you don't have hay. And quite frankly, you're not going to raise a very good crop on dry land at this point. And so there's a lot of cattle getting liquidated. Some of them are getting slaughtered. That's not doing anything to make our numbers situation better. And so with it looking like we're at least going to raise a crop with most people's estimates, I've got to think that corn prices will at least stay under control, like not $8 under control. And so with that being the case, I'm still looking out to maybe first quarter, second quarter of 23. I'll tell you what, I wouldn't want to be selling fats. I think as a producer, if you can lock in profit, no problem there. I don't want to be mistaken in how I'm explaining this. But from a speculative standpoint, boy, I just don't think that'd be a good play at all, because I think you could see some super fireworks. Now, on hogs, I don't know. It's tough to even $122 hogs. I think the last time we talked, they were probably 118. And you asked what I thought I would do, and I thought 120 seemed too rich. So, you know, as a disclaimer, never trade hogs based on anything I said, but first of all. Second of all, though, $122 hogs. I mean, you look at your next month out, you know, October, $99.60 and Dece, $89. So when's the last time you saw a $33 inverse from two options, you know? And so you see this huge inverted market. Numbers are pretty low as far as hogs are concerned. Demand's been pretty strong. But it makes it really hard on a hog producer if they're independent. And I know there's not a lot of them, but there's still several. It makes it pretty hard to figure out exactly what to do. But most of them that I know can still make really good money at $90 hogs. So that's the really good news. But as far as speculatively, I struggle to think that we can get much above the area that we're in right now in front month. But the only time will tell. I think the really interesting thing is going to be when August goes off the board. What's October do? You know, because if it goes and chases where August was, it's going to be an interesting dynamic that will likely pull up to an extent, you know, your December as well.
Well, Matt, great stuff. I know you got a speech to get ready for. Any final thoughts for us real quick before we run out of time?
Yeah, I think the main thing, as always, is going to be look and see what today's prices mean for you as a producer, because the long and short of it is that these prices are not what they once were, especially as far as corn's concerned. But I know a lot of folks that are telling me right now, if they raised a crop, be the best income year they've ever seen. So that is if we don't mess things up. Think about what happened a year ago. Try to tune people out if they want to get bullish on you with any sort of upward movement this week, because upward movement at this time of year should be looked at as an opportunity rather than something that gets me more bullish. And that's what we tend to do from an emotional standpoint, is when the markets are going up, we get more bullish instead of looking at it as an opportunity.
Well, Matt, great stuff. As always, I know folks can contact you and the team, agmarket.net. The app is in the app store, agmarket.app. A lot of great ways to get in touch with you guys. And I always appreciate the time, Matt. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, absolutely. Appreciate you having me.
Matt Bennett with agmarket.net joining us today on Market Talk. That's going to do it for the show. Find us, markettalkag.com. I'm Jesse Allen. Have a great afternoon.